Blog Talk Radio.
He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue.
Wake up, Claire! Jim's dead! They're dead! They're all dead!
Faber's gonna kill you faster than a bullet.
Say hello to my little friend!
They're all gonna laugh at you!
The Brian De Palma Tribute Show, Sunday, July 22nd at 6 p.m.
Welcome to our first Wednesday night edition of Movie Geeks United. Tonight, the Movie Geeks give you the inside scoop on the new highly anticipated horror film, Women Studies, with writer-director Lonnie Martin, and stars Judith O'Day, Cindy Marie Martin, and Tara Garwood. Plus, an inside look at two of the year's biggest films, I Know Who Killed Me and Charlie Wilson's War, with actor Spencer Garrett. And get the latest scoop on our upcoming two-hour Brian De Palma tribute show. Do you have any questions for tonight's guest? You can email your questions to the geeks at any time during the show at moviegeeksunited@yahoo.com. Sit back, strap in, and get ready. It's time to get your geek on. Here are your hosts, Jamie, Chris, and Jerry.
Hello out there, everybody. This is Movie Geeks United, a special Wednesday night episode. I am one of your co-hosts for the evening. My name is Jamie, and with us tonight also is fellow movie geek Jerry. How you doing, Jerry?
I'm doing well. How's everyone doing?
Our third movie geek is not with us this evening, but he will be back with us on Sunday night show. Now, why a Wednesday night show? Actually, this is a very special thing that we're starting every Wednesday night, and it's a time that's going to be reserved primarily for interviews with people within the industry. And our Sunday shows are going to be more of a free-for-all with the movie geeks and your calls and that sort of thing. Except for once a month, we're going to still have our Sunday night two-hour tribute show. And this Sunday night, we have Brian De Palma, a tribute to Brian De Palma. And we have some great guests involved in that. Actor William Catt, William Finley, author Eyal Peretz, who has a new book out called Becoming Visionary.
Which comes out on my birthday of all days.
It comes out in October, yeah, and we feel very special. We got an advanced copy of it, so
yes.
That's great. And it really examines De Palma's films from a philosophical perspective, which is very fascinating. That's going to be a great interview. And we also have a critical roundtable of De Palma's films where we examine all the major milestones in his career with critic Armand White, who is a very noted De Palma devotee.
Yes, he is.
And we have the De Palma A La Mode host, Jeff Baran. That's one of the best websites and resources for De Palma information on the web. And so that's going to be a great show that we have this Sunday, 2 hours at 6 o'clock Eastern. And I guess I want to make an announcement that we've decided upon our next big tribute show for next month, another two-hour spectacular that we're going to use to celebrate some of our favorite character actors, the people that time and again they come through with exceptional performances and they're not usually given the credit that they so deserve.
That's right.
And we'll reveal, we have about 9 or 10 names, and we'll reveal 3 of them. Jerry, you want to reveal the first one?
I'll reveal, I'm going to go with J.T. Walsh.
Yes, that's going to be exciting. J.T. Walsh, who sadly has passed now. Just an incredible presence in every movie he did.
Yes.
He just elevated every film. And we're also going to pay tribute to another Walsh, which is M. Emmett Walsh.
He's one of the greats.
Oh, absolutely. And we also have Will Patton and Viola Davis. So there's 4 names for you to prepare for next month's show. We have a lot of lines that are being taken up tonight by our guests. So we ask that you please hold your calls, and if you have a question for any of our guests, we'll be checking our Yahoo mail account throughout the show at moviegeeksunited@yahoo.com. And also I wanted to point out to you guys, you can subscribe to the show by iTunes by clicking the Subscribe to iTunes icon on the right-hand side of our home page at Blog Talk Radio. And we're very excited. We found out today that we're being carried on iTunes. We're one of 20 shows on the Blog Talk Radio slate that are being offered through iTunes, so we're very honored to be a part of that. And for all of you De Niro Pacino fans out there, and who isn't, We just posted the teaser poster for their new film, Righteous Kill. It's on our Blog Talk Radio blog. So check that out. Okay, are you ready for our guest tonight?
I certainly am. They're they're closer to me. They're local heroes in one sense, so I'm very excited.
Oh, wow, great. We'll certainly talk about that then. All righty. Our first guests tonight are currently in production on the film Women's Studies, which has already received considerable word of mouth from the likes of Fangoria Magazine and JoeBlow.com, just to name a few. Women's Studies harkens to the classic genre pictures that relished in subversive social commentary, as it presents an intelligent look at groupthink, women's issues, and how blind belief in a one-sided dogma can create a terrorist. Joining us tonight are the film's writer, producer, director Lonnie Martin, co-producer and actress Cindy Marie Martin, and co-stars Tara Garwood and Judith O'Day, who incidentally portrayed Barbara in the legendary 1968 horror film Night of the Living Dead. We are honored to welcome all of them to our show. So
yes.
Let me bring them up one by one. Lonnie and Cindy, are you guys there?
How you doing?
Hey, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
And I believe that this is the line that Tara's on. Tara, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hello, Tara.
Thanks for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having us. Glad to be here.
And we have Miss O'Day, Judith O'Day, on this line. Judith?
Hi, I'm right here.
Hi, thanks so much for calling in and joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Women's Studies has been receiving quite a bit of positive buzz throughout the Internet lately, and you just started shooting this month. Is that correct, Lonnie?
That is correct, yeah. We started shooting on the 29th of May.
Oh, wow.
Wow, okay.
So how long is the production phase going to run?
We're hoping to have most principal photography done by September 15th is kind of our target date. I'm sure there'll be a few pickups through the end of September and beginning of October, but right around, you know, the leaves start to fall, hopefully we'll be getting into post.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I want to ask each of your actors what roles they play, but first, Lonnie, can you tell me a little bit about it? What's the basic premise?
The story revolves around Mary, a grad student and a political intern. She interns under a senator. She recently discovered she's pregnant, and her boyfriend and a couple friends are on their way back to Chicago from D.C., where they've all been interning, summer jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And their car gets stolen, and they run across these women from a women's academy who take them in. And when there, Mary meets Judith, who is in so many ways a kindred spirit, a devoted women's rights activist. And what happens is they start to find all these similarities between them and what they believe and the things they want to accomplish, but there's one crucial difference, and that's that Judith believes perhaps murder is the quickest way to move her agenda forward, Mary's devoted to more peaceful methods, and they find out that this brand of feminists are very much anti-men and wanting to literally exterminate mankind.
Mm.
Wow.
That sounds like a very kind of ripe premise, just a very rich premise for a film. Cindy, can you tell me a little bit about the role you play and what draws you to that character?
I look at Mary as she's an idealist in an imperfect world. She thinks that doing the right thing and going through the right channels, that's going to make a change, live the change that you want to see, and people are going to see it and they're going to follow the lead.
Uh-huh.
And Judith, for all intents and purposes, what Judith shows and what she sees in her is the same thing. Judith outwardly doesn't show to Mary that she is this, you know, subversive, very violent extremist. Mary kind of finds it out through kind of through a surprise and gets a bit of a betrayal. I think that she's like an every woman and portrays in the film just this intelligence. It's our director of photography mentioned it in a good way, a very interesting manner, that it's the film follows feminists and what feminism truly is, and then what people who are against feminism believe that feminism is, and it's those two groups clashing, and it's just it's exciting and fascinating to be a part of, and the project is so women-centric, which is sometimes very difficult to find for roles for women and projects to be involved in. It's exciting to be a part of.
Judith, how about you? What drew you to this film and this character in particular?
Oh, gosh. Well, actually, when I saw the posting for auditions, I immediately went, ooh, this is a film I would love to do. It looked like so much fun, and I love the way it takes, as Cindy was saying, it takes sort of both sides of the issue. It never really falls on one side or the other, and it's got humor and much, that's my dog.
Okay.
It's got humor, and it's also got, you know, a lot of, you know, the scary horror stuff. It just kind of has everything.
Right. Tara, what about you?
Sorry?
I'm sorry. What drew you to this?
About my role. I am, as I call her, a psycho uber feminist. she's incredibly passionate about their cause.
Uh-huh.
I think to the extent of not really caring about much else. But she is immediately drawn to Mary on meeting her, so that. That provides, I think, a whole another dynamic to the whole story and to her character, that she feels very strongly about Mary and is incredibly attracted to her and wants Mary to like her. So she tries to make herself likable, even though she's kind of this crazy, horrible person.
Right.
Lonnie, you're directing from your own script, and it definitely from what we've heard, it has some social themes prevalent in the film. What kind of observations inspired this idea?
That could be a long answer. the short and simple of, I've always had a great interest in the psychology, most specifically gender psychology is always... kind of been interesting to me, the way that, you know, men and women approach problem solving differently. They approach emotional communication differently, you know, and it's very frustrating in relationships sometimes for men and women to try to communicate because they just approach things from two different ways. One is not in any way better than the other, simply that it's different. So I've always been fascinated in sort of trying to understand woman and also understand, why someone would want to kill somebody on another level. I mean,
right.
That's kind of what we're looking at more than anything else. Is let's take extremism, let's take fundamentalist extremism, and instead of putting it in an Islamic setting or a right-wing militant setting, let's put it in a feminist setting. You know, feminism, even the most radical feminist, is by and large nonviolent. So let's take this idea of killing for a political or religious belief and let's put it in this place, kind of show how asinine it is.
Right. Now, are there existing films on which you've modeled your approach to this film?
Oh, very much so. The two biggest influences on the film are The Stepford Wives, the original 1975
right.
version with Paul Prentice and Catherine Ross, and also Invasion of the Body Snatchers very much has a... kind of a feel of a sort of a body snatcher movie of paranoia. It's a little bit about that.
I would like to add just something, just from what you've said, what everyone has said about the movie, this seems like the perfect heir to, like, the great social commentary horror films of the 70s. I mean, you really have made something like a really high-quality social commentary here that's been sadly lacking in the last couple of years in the genre. So, you got to say, you sold me tonight more than ever.
And, of course, we can't forget about Night of the Living Dead, the original.
Of course.
That definitely dealt with social consciousness themes. And, of course, Miss O'Day, you played a major role in that original film. Why do you think, in your opinion, Miss O'Day, did that film work so well? And did you have any idea what kind of potential it had while you were making it?
I don't think any of us had a hint of an idea that it would do what it did. We were just a wonderful group of people who wanted to make something the best way they could make it.
Uh-huh.
They hoped that if they did that, then anything that followed would get better and better.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it is done. It's done because of the timing. 1968, so much was happening during
right.
that time,
yeah.
the civil rights movement, etc. But the magic of our film in regard to civil rights was that the black and white issue was never really emphasized.
Mm-hmm.
What was just human beings doing their best to survive. That Ben happened to be black and that Barbara happened to be white was exactly that. They just happened to be. I think oftentimes this happens in films. You get a combination of people, the timing, it just works. And it all depends upon what the general public is, how the general public feels about it. And over these years, the general public has been absolutely incredible. They've made the film what it is today.
Mm-hmm. What was the key message? You've spoken to the civil rights issues. Was that the key message of Night of the Living Dead for you, or did you not approach it like that?
Oh, no. Civil rights was not even a part of it. For me, the key message was how each of us reacts differently to unspeakable
mm-hmm.
terror or cataclysmic events, and certainly people coming to life is a cataclysmic event.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Each one of those people handled it differently. I think it was fascinating to see how they did manage it. And I also think it's as close to reality as anything was at that time.
Yes.
All the good folk didn't survive. In films up to that point, all the good folk, or at least some of them, survived in all the pictures, the horror pictures we saw. But in this instance, it was almost like a documentary where the good folk tried and tried and tried,
right.
but sometimes the good don't always make it.
Right. You absolutely know you're in the hands of a master horror film director, and George Romero certainly is.
Yes.
When you feel that no one on the screen is safe, and you've just spoken to that. And another series of suspense films, actually, and Lonnie, you mentioned them, that tend to be so malleable to the climates of each era, are the various incarnations of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And
yeah.
Tara, I know you appear in the new film, The Invasion.
Yes,
with Nicole Kidman and Daniel Craig. What kind of take does this film have as it relates to where we are as a country and as a people today?
Oh, wow. That's a big question. let me see. I think to some extent, at least part of it, from the parts of the script that I got to read, definitely it's geared a little more towards the terrorism
right.
aspect.
Mm-hmm.
of things that we are experiencing in our country now. I think that, I guess it's kind of hard to make a truly scary movie without speaking to that in some way because it's so big
mm-hmm.
a part of all of our lives. And that's actually for me, having not actually gotten to read the entire script, what I noticed the most that really changed it from the other body snatcher movies.
Right.
That's what really spoke to me.
That's what I gather from the trailer that I've seen, too. It definitely is like it speaks to the post-9/11 era.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a very big aspect of you can't trust anyone.
Right.
Just people you've known for your entire life may now suddenly be the enemy, which I think is, another thing relating to that terrorism issue that we've all dealt with. Like, the guy next door might be
right.
one of the bad guys.
Yeah.
Even if he didn't look like it yesterday.
Yeah.
Right.
Lonnie, what is it about the horror genre that makes it such a kind of an ideal canvas to explore these social issues?
Yes.
I think fear is the second most primal emotion we have, the first being love. So fear is hardwired into us. That it just comes back to the survival instinct. And I think, you know, a lot of our fears, especially in the 20th century, when we look back at history, have been social fears. Nazism, communism, Maoism, all these all the changes, you know, that the world has gone through in the past century, you know, all the, were social changes for the well, not all of them, but many of them were social changes for the most part. And I think, you know, people fear change, and I think that in a horror movie context, you don't directly deal with the social issue. You directly deal. Our movie is about killer women. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? On that level, it's about killer women. But on other levels, if you want it, if you want to look for it, it's about feminism. It's about terrorism. It's about all the dreaded isms. You know, but
right.
It's I think that horror. I think it's good for to look at it from, you know, the side and from a different angle, and
right.
Horror really allows you to do that.
May I interject something? This is Judith speaking.
Yes.
Because Lonnie and I have never met. I'm anxious to meet him when I fly out on the 21st. But something that I think his film is going to allow is much conversation, possibly some major debate, especially from women. He said, killer women. This film has to do with killer women. Being as old as I am, and I'm the old matriarch of this group, I don't feel and see and perceive women as being basically brutal and killers. I see them as nurturers and those willing to sit down and talk to you rather than whip out a gun and kill you.
Right.
And yet, here we have a group of women gone awry in a world that for many of us who've lived here for quite a few decades seems to be going madly awry.
Yes.
Why women, women who are the nurturers, the bearers of life, why they would go over the edge like this? I think that there's going to be some good talk and conversation about this.
I think so, too.
Yeah, that's why it was an exciting prospect for me, a project for me to become involved with.
Absolutely.
I play the senator. As a matter of fact, Mary is working for me. It's a most interesting character.
Oh, we can't wait to
to
see this. Cindy, I know you're co-producing with Lonnie, who incidentally is your husband, correct?
Yes.
I was wondering if you could speak, and Lonnie, you can chime in on this too, to the challenges of the independent filmmaker. If you could kind of take us briefly through the process and the challenges of putting something like this project together.
I don't know if your show's long enough, but
it is. This is our first feature-length undertaking. So we'll be married 4 years in August, and we've been, you know, working at this since we've been a couple, and it's been from short films and working our way up to get the credibility and the backing to try the feature. And it's a lot of legwork. It's a lot of hours put in. They're all terribly worth it. You meet so many. There's a lot of benefits and pluses on this side as well. In the independent community at this level, we're so very small. We're very small budget production, and everyone, it's like a family on set.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that we're working with people who were all our friends first. They've become our friends through meeting them within the community. And you find the people who are doing it because they love it. They're certainly not there for the money, because at this level it's not there. So you have people who are doing this for the love and for the dedication to the project, because it's something that they believe in, and they believe in you and are backing you, and it's just the energy that's created from that, and the process is very collaborative. There's input from everyone on set, cast and crew. It's not a dictatorship. It's a collaboration, and the product that comes out of that is so much better, because one person's, what's in one person's head is a fantastic idea, but when you mix it with everyone else, you get something much richer.
Right, absolutely. Lonnie, how have you found this process so far?
I mean, I love it. To speak to the sort of collaborative nature and the organic nature, I come from a theater background, so I've had to bring some of that to sort of the style and the way I approach, you know, cinematography and sound and, of course, storytelling. It's very hard on this level. You're working with a very limited budget. You're working with very limited resources, so you have to stretch it as far as you can. And, you know, like Cindy said, it's very long hours.
Creative. creative solutions. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And that's exactly right. Creative solutions are key, and we've kind of been lucky enough that we've found our ways. We've had a lot of happy accidents, which is, you know, that's the best part of the creative process.
Absolutely, that's what
you're looking for. Finding these found objects, you know, these things that you plan on doing it one way, and all of a sudden it creates its own, it creates its own level.
Yeah. Now, how do you intend to distribute the film, and when can our listeners expect to see it?
The film, right now we're hoping to have the film finished first part of 2008, and we will hit the festival circuit, we'll hit a bunch of film markets, we will try to find, our goal is to hopefully get a direct-to-DVD distribution deal for the movie.
Personally, I hope you get it at the AFI Silver.
We hope we do. I actually have quite a few contacts up there, so hopefully we can get a
screening up there.
Right up the
street, so yeah, I'd love to see it there.
Yeah, and that's another thing. You spoke earlier, you know, about, I guess, Jerry, you're kind of local to the area.
Yes.
D.C.'s a fantastic independent film community.
Oh, it is.
D.C.
We've talked about that before. We've had some people on, some people I think that some of your actors and actresses have worked with in the past, and it is, I just, something, we do have one of the tightest and best independent film communities, I think, anywhere. Very loyal to each other. I mean, especially with the 48-hour film project, there's a great sense, you know, everyone helps each other out, and it's just, all of you guys have just really done such wonders for the area. I mean, it's very, you know, I take a lot of pride when I, you know, read about your film and everything that I live around here. It really means a lot to us.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. I mean, and there are so many other people that sort of, I think, built up, you know, have got to the place where Cindy and I have been able to kind of tap into the resources that we have. You know, I mean, we're so lucky. We came in at a great time when things, you know, have really gotten rich. We have Discovery Channel based out, and there's a lot of talent who does a lot of corporate video and a lot of government training films, and they're dying to do some narrative.
Oh, they can't wait to. They love when something like this comes along.
Yeah. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and we can't wait for the film. And please keep us posted on its progress.
Yes, please. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you all.
Ms. O'Day, I look forward to seeing you this weekend.
Bye-bye now. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, that is writer-director Lonnie Martin and stars Judith O'Day, Cindy Marie Martin, and Tara Garwood from the upcoming film Women's Studies, which has been receiving a lot of press among horror fans on the internet. So there you go. There's your scoop for all of our listeners out there. Okay, our next guest is all set up and ready to go. I'm sorry, Jerry, I muted you by accident.
No, that's all right. No, that's quite all right. No, it's getting a lot of buzz, like, everywhere, you know, not just the horror, but it seems like a lot of the independents and everything. It's really just wonderful to read about. And
oh, yeah.
It really is.
And there's something about that genre that that it can have kind of a grassroots rising of anticipation, you know,
yes,
through
absolutely.
The web, and yeah, it's a very malleable genre. But our next guest is up and ready to go, and he is a tremendously talented character actor whose resume is filled with one terrific performance after another. After studying with famed acting teacher Sanford Meisner, our guest went on to appear in a series of unforgettable films like Albino Alligator, Ghost of Mississippi, Air Force One, Lovely and Amazing, Thank You for Smoking, House of Sand and Fog, and Bobby, just to name a few.
Wow.
His stream of television work is equally impressive, with indelible contributions to landmark shows like 24, The West Wing, Law and Order, Carnival, Judging Amy, CSI, Murder, She Wrote, Star Trek The Next Generation, and countless others. He currently has 4 films awaiting release, including the highly anticipated Mike Nichols film with Julia Roberts and Tom Hanks titled Charlie Wilson's War, 21 starring Kevin Spacey, and next week's thriller I Know Who Killed Me, co-starring Lindsay Lohan and Julia Armand. It is a great pleasure to welcome to our show Mr. Spencer Garrett.
Mr. Hey, guys, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for that lovely introduction. That was very kind.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah.
I know that you have an event in a matter of minutes here, so we're so honored that you joined us tonight.
No problem. I'm on my way to see the great Isaac Hayes at the Hollywood Bowl.
Really?
Oh, I'm jealous. I'm very jealous.
Isaac Hayes and Booker T and the MGs.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's going to be quite a show.
It'll be a fun night. Where are you guys?
Jerry is based out of Maryland.
In Maryland.
And I'm based out of Florida. So.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
This is modern technology at work.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I wanted to start out by asking you studied with Meisner?
I did, yeah.
I believe it was Elia Kazan who said, if you get an actor who's been trained by Meisner, you are truly blessed. What was it about Meisner as a teacher that made him special, and what kind of tools did he help you develop?
Well, Sandy was extraordinary, and I got him, I was lucky enough to study with him at the sort of the later years of his life. My mom is an actor as well. Her name is Kathleen Nolan, and she was president of the Screen Actors Guild and done, 8,000 television shows, and she studied with Sandy in the 50s at the Neighborhood Playhouse, and she said, if you decide to do this insanity of, the acting business, there's only one guy to, to be with, and that's Sandy. And so I approached Mr. Meisner when I got out of college, and I was 22, and we interviewed together, and he said, I'm going to kick your ass for the next 4 years. And he did. He was incredibly generous and incredibly tough on me at the same time. It's kind of like being studying with Yoda. I mean, I can't really there was something. I mean, if you ever saw pictures of Sandy or listened to him speak, there's something very, very Yoda-like. I mean, he lost his voice box through throat cancer, and so he spoke through a microphone, which was attached to his glasses. He just turned 80 when I began studying with him.
Oh, wow.
And so he had to choose his words very carefully with the class. And so he'd been doing it for such a long time that he had his way of teaching that was sort of distilled to such a fine point that, that he could say a lot with very little.
Yeah.
And that's what was kind of amazing about him. He didn't sit there and pontificate and be an acting guru. I mean, he just basically let you get up and do your work. And if he thought that you were being honest, he would let you know. And if he thought you weren't being honest with your work, he would really let you know.
Yeah.
But that was what was kind of extraordinary is that he said a lot without an ability to say a lot, and he did it with sometimes with just a raised eyebrow or a very few words. It was really amazing. It was an amazing experience. And my very first introduction to him, he has an island in the West Indies, a home on an island, the island of Bekwi in the West Indies, and I study. He takes 20 students there every summer for 6 weeks, and we just do a crash course in Meisner. And so that was my first introduction to Sandy, it was a very unforgettable time in my life.
Oh,
that's,
I bet.
That got me started.
Yeah, I bet.
What a way to get started!
Yeah. No, it really was. And I did it. I did it the following summer, and then I spent the next 4 years with him at the Neighborhood Playhouse in New York, and then out here in Los Angeles with him. So it was a true honor. It was a real honor to have gotten to spend some time with him. And he was and like every teacher, you take what works and you throw the rest away, and you apply what works for you. And so a lot of what Sandy gave me, I use in my work, and I've studied a little bit with a lot of different kinds of methods, and so you take a little bit and put it in the salad and see what works.
Yeah, you always have those tools to draw upon if you need them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now this must be an exciting time for you. I mean, so many kind of high profile films in the pipeline for you, and your new film opens next week. I Know Who Killed Me. What kind of time is this for you? As an actor, do you feel a twinge of excitement or nervousness when a film's opening is coming up?
It's a guy. It's kind of exciting. I mean, that was a it was a the I Know Who Killed Me experience came. I think we finished it in December. I think I worked on it for a total of about 2 months. Chris Severtson, who directed it, worked extremely hard, and we had a good time. It was also really one of the cool things about it. I'd worked with Lindsay Lohan and another young actor, Brian Garrity. We'd worked on Bobby together, Emilio Estevez's film, which came out last year, and that was
a good movie. I like that movie a lot.
Thank you. It was a good film and a timely film, and Emilio really poured his heart into it, and people came in, you know, the Anthony Hopkins and Bill Macy and Fishburne, and I mean extraordinary stars that came and showed up and worked for nothing, and it was a real labor of love, and that was a real privilege to be a part of that. So Lindsay and Brian Garrity, who was also in Bobby, he was one of the two young campaign workers that goes on. And so Brian plays Lindsay's boyfriend in this film, and so it was kind of a nice reunion for the three of us, and then a very, very dear old friend of mine, Neil McDonough, who plays the father. It was a great Neil and I worked together years and years ago on some episode of JAG, I think, when we were both starting out, and we've remained friends ever since, and so it was nice to finally get to work with Neil again. And,
yeah, he's a fantastic actor.
He's a tremendous actor. Just an incredible presence and just a heart of gold, and it was a lot of fun. It was a really good experience, and I'd never worked in the horror genre before, so that was kind of fun and interesting.
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about the film and your role in it?
I can't tell you too much. I gotta leave a little.
I got a feeling it sounds like a movie that has a big twist in it. So I don't know.
It has a lot of twists, and unfortunately, I can't. I'll tell you, but then I have to kill you.
Yeah, I know. I want to see it, so I don't want you to kill me.
By all means, do see it. Go see us, and then go see The Simpsons on the same day.
Okay, sounds good to me.
That sounds like a great double feature.
Yeah,
I wanted to ask you about Lindsay Lohan because. She seems to get press for everything except her acting, which is a shame. In your view, what are her strengths and qualities as an actress?
Her strengths and qualities as an actor, I think that she brings a real rawness. When she can be incredibly present, and that's her best gift. She showed it in Bobby, and she certainly shows it in this. She shows up. She shows up and she comes to play. And she comes and she's an incredibly hard worker.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, yeah, there is a lot of baggage that's surrounding her these days. And we were fortunate enough, actually, in both cases. In the case of Bobby, I think because we had Mr. Hopkins, who was the executive producer, Anthony Hopkins, and he had sort of laid down the law. That there were no shenanigans from anybody. We had 5 weeks to make this film, and no matter who you were, just check your ego at the door and just come and do your work. And she did.
And when Anthony Hopkins says it, you do it.
And when Anthony Hopkins says it, you absolutely do it. And that was a treat. That was an honor as well. And just being in the presence of that guy, you want to bring your A game.
Yes.
And everybody did. And she did as well. I thought she was lovely in the film, and she also did a great job. I think she did a great job with us. You'll see it. It's a very, very grown up performance for her.
Yeah.
She plays she plays two different characters as we've seen her do before. She plays a stripper and she plays this kind of small town innocent girl. And Chris Severtson, who was our director, he directed this other film, The Lost, which is extraordinary, which hopefully you'll get a chance to see as well.
Mm-hmm.
She showed enormous respect for Chris, I think she did a terrific job. And with all of the, we're surrounded by the paparazzi and all of the, it was just bananas on
yeah.
some days.
Yeah, it's a bunch of silliness, isn't it?
Yeah,
It's a bunch of silliness. And I think that she's going to come through the other side and be one of our one of our good actors. I really do.
Yeah. Before I let you go, because I want to let you get to your concert, I got to ask you about Charlie Wilson's War.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Which for us is definitely the most anticipated film this upcoming season.
For me as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What can you tell us about that experience? Of Mike Nichols directed.
Yeah, two words, Mike Nichols. I mean, that was a dream come true. I mean, it's, you know, in terms of getting to work with your heroes, you know, for me this year, I've a lot of the people in Bobby I've worked with before and been friends with for a long time, but to be a part of a film like Bobby that was so much from the heart and something that Emilio was so passionate about, and then to go from that into an experience like Mike Nichols, you know, I just kind of feel like that kind of year doesn't come around again. So I'm
right.
Just, you know,
yeah, and people refer to Mike Nichols as the epitome of an actor's director.
Yeah, very much so.
Now, how does that apply to the way he works with actors?
He just he doesn't get in your way. He lets you do your thing, and he doesn't stand in your way. And he will, you know, with me, I mean, we had Philip Seymour Hoffman and Amy Adams and Julie Roberts and Tom Hanks, and it was just, you know, from floor to ceiling, it was just
right. Yeah, I can imagine.
So, you know, he does it. He'll direct you very gently, I guess, for lack of a better word. He just, you know, he'll come up and he'll whisper something in my ear, and then he'll come and whisper something in Tom's ear, and, you know, neither of us will know what the other one is saying, and whatever he said to either of us gives him, you know, just that much of a little tweak on the thing that he needs to see. And, you know, at the end of the take, we both just kind of smile at each other like, yeah, wow, well, that's because you're Mike Nichols.
Yeah.
He just has a very gentle way about him. And, it was a privilege to watch him, because everybody, you know, from the rigging gaffer to the craft service guy to, you know, to the DP, everybody was just, you know, they knew that they were there for, you know, for the master. And,
yes.
You know, he brings this kind of legendary status along with him. So everybody just, but again, it's not a big ego thing. I mean, he was just a lovely guy and lovely to talk to, and everybody just wanted to do good work for him. And those are the guys that you want to work with. And I have to say, Emilio was the same way. He's just so generous of heart and large of spirit that you want to walk across the coals.
Absolutely.
For the guy.
Emilio Estevez is a fantastic talent.
And a good man too.
Yeah.
And that was the way I felt about Mr. Nichols. He just, you know, he brings this kind of legendary vibe, but, you know, you just want to do good work for the guy because he's given us so much good work.
Yeah.
Right?
And actually, Charlie Wilson's War, the screenplay is written by my favorite writer, Aaron Sorkin.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, and you can't beat that.
It's quite a combo.
Yeah.
It's a really good combo, and that's a good old relationship of mine. I worked with Aaron on Sports Night and on The West Wing,
yeah.
And you know, to get to say Aaron's words and be in a Mike Nichols film, it doesn't get any better than that, you know.
Do you feel like this is the most kind of stimulating creative time for you in your career so far?
I think so. I have to say so. I mean, it's I've been doing it for about 20 years, and I grew up in a family of actors and artists, and so for me it feels like after paying dues for a long time, it kind of felt like somebody invited me to sit at the grown-ups table this year.
Yeah.
You get the little card table at Thanksgiving where all the kids sit.
Right.
And, I've gotten to do terrific work and work with wonderful people, but this year, for whatever reason, there's a terrific film coming out called 21, with Kevin Spacey and Lawrence Fishburne.
Yes.
That I just finished and which I just saw the other night, which is going to be great. And
it's,
then
it's
I just,
the MIT students.
The MIT students that go to Vegas.
Well, that's
yeah,
a great
on the
book. That's a great
up, bringing down the house. Yeah.
Yeah. Though you're actually in really two books I've really liked the last couple of years. Charlie Wilson's War, which is definitely ripe for these times, and the other
that
one.
A great book. Yeah.
I mean, this is great. You couldn't ask for better projects to be in. Those are just wonderful.
Yeah, and you're also in a film called The Return.
Exactly. Yeah, with Tim Robbins and Rachel McAdams and Michael Pena, and
wow.
I just finished that in Chicago not long ago. So.
Well, we want to let you get to your concert, but when these films, when we get closer to the release dates of some of these future projects of yours, we'd love to have you come back on the show when we have more time with you.
Yes.
It's been a pleasure, you guys. I really appreciate it.
It's been a real honor to speak with you,
yes.
sir. Thank you so
much. Thank you very much.
Keep up the good work, fellas.
All right, thank you. Enjoy your concert.
Cheers.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Spencer Garrett, a fantastic actor, and what a resume.
That is. It's quite a resume. I'm still in awe just looking at all the titles. I mean, just unbelievable, everyone he's worked with.
Yeah, and that can only make you better as an actor. I mean, he's a fantastic actor.
I agree.
And that's the reason why these high-profile, legendary directors request him for their films.
Right.
To work with that level of people, to have that kind of collaboration with Mike Nichols and Kevin Spacey. And
Emilio Estevez.
That really speaks to his talent, and that's just an incredible resume. And we were so honored to speak with him. Charlie Wilson's War, I tell you, you talk about prestige films. It doesn't get much more prestigious than Charlie Wilson's War.
Yeah, and that's the end of the year. I think Christmas Day, right? Christmas Day release?
I think so. And, you know, we're talking about something that I'm excited about are the Oscars, obviously. I'm always excited about.
Right.
I'm very geeky about the Oscars. So I can't wait to do a special show for the Oscars, which we're going to blow it out of the water.
We are going to blow it out. Let's hope that's in there. I hope that's in there.
I think for sure it will be. I mean, I don't see how you can lose out on Mike Nichols and Charlie Wilson's War with that cast.
Right.
That seems like just a shoe-in for
mm-hmm.
Oscars.
It does. No, it does.
Yeah. So what's been going on with you this past week? Have you seen any good films?
Have I seen any good films? Well, let's see, because we didn't get a chance to talk. We're definitely not going to get a chance, I guess, on Sunday to talk, because it's all about Brian.
Yeah.
I did get to see, and I really strongly recommend, I haven't written anything about it, I just really didn't know what to say, but Rescue Dawn, Werner Herzog's new
mm-hmm.
movie
mm-hmm.
with Christian Bale. And I noticed, like, in the popular press and everything, people are saying it's so unlike him to make this kind of film. And I have to say, I really disagree with that, because it really harks back to his earlier fictional works, even his documentaries, but like Agrarian Wrath of God, Fitzcarraldo, and Cobra Verde, all films he made with Klaus Kinski.
Yes.
Probably when the two of these guys worked together, I can honestly say magic and insanity occurred.
Yeah, that's a really combustible duo right now.
Yes, and if Klaus Kinski was still alive, I do think he would have the Christian Bale part. There's no doubt in my mind he would have the Christian Bale part.
Yeah.
But these two guys, Christian Bale, I just think with each film, each performance gets better and better. But this is a very traditional Herzog film, and people should not be thrown off because people saying, oh, he's doing uncommon valor or missing in action.
Mm-hmm.
Far from it.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine Agrarian Wrath of God set in Vietnam. That's what you have.
Yeah, I've read a few things about the film. One has drawn that uncommon valor parallel.
And it's not fair. It's not a...
Yeah, but they heaped praise upon the film. And
oh, yeah.
That, you know, it's an A-plus version of uncommon valor, which, incidentally, one of the funniest moments for me in the history of film are the closing credits of uncommon valor. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
What's the actor's name? Randall Tex Cobb.
I think
dancing in silhouette. Like.
Yes. I do remember this vaguely, but it's coming back to me.
That is a camp classic right there.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I read about Herzog, it was an interview he did where he said, "Look, I've always made mass entertainment movies."
Yes,
he feels that way.
He does. He does, and he's right to an extent. It's really interesting. He going because we've had this conversation just the two of us, but Herzog gives De Palma says a film director has 30 years in him. Herzog says only 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they both exceeded their expectations. And Herzog has found this wonderful second career, I guess, in the 80s as a documentary filmmaker. And he's actually, you know, for Grizzly Man, definitely put him on the map for a whole new generation of fans.
Right.
But this guy is really just incredible. I was just really thunderstruck how well done this movie was.
Yeah. I just want to say that we had a listener submit two questions for Ms. Garwood in the earlier section. I'm so sorry we didn't get around to asking them. They're both exceptional questions, but Mr. Garrett was on the line and we were at a rush to get him on, and I'm very sorry for that.
Yes.
Thank you so much for submitting those questions. They were excellent. And we thank you for listening, too.
Yes, we do.
So Rescue Dawn. And you've been watching a lot of De Palma films as well.
I have been watching a lot of De Palma films, but that should go as no secret to anyone who's been reading or paying attention for the last decade or so.
Yeah. Now, are there any kind of movie news stories that have interested you these past few weeks more than anything else?
I think the one that we were talking about was the Daniel Craig's announcement that about the next Bond movie. They're trying to Barbara Broccoli, I think that's her last name, the producer who's in charge of the Bond films. They want to return it to this Roger Moore era humor.
Right.
And while, you know, a lot of people, the first thing they always say is Roger Moore films are probably like the most dated and the cheesiest.
Yes.
And I just, my only complaint with this is, why just burn all that goodwill you just earned with this last movie? Why take it and then turn it into basically like Austin Powers, I guess? Or
it seems like a big step back. And
it does.
It seemed like Daniel Craig, when he was talking about that, was speaking enthusiastically about that direction.
That scared me. That's what I think scared me the most.
Yeah, but I'm all for it, personally, because just like I said a few weeks ago or last week about the Bond movies, I thought that was what was missing from Casino Royale, that sense of charm and fun. And that's personally the thing I enjoy most about the Bond pictures.
And I think if it's done, I think the best example that where they sort of knew they weren't taking themselves so seriously, but they still put out a good movie, is the last one Sean Connery did in the original series, Diamonds Are Forever, which is a great balance of the humor,
yeah, from
the original
run of Bond. So yeah.
Yeah, I think if that's the kind of thing they're going for, if that's what they mean, I think then it should be fine. I think if you're going something more towards, you know, where it's just so silly, then it might not be good. But I think if they can keep it, Connery was one of the ones who could definitely do all the one-liners, but still manage to keep, there was something professional, there was something fun and professional at the same time.
Yeah. We have a caller from a 760 area code. Going to patch him in. 760, go right ahead.
Hello, my name is Nicholas Fargo. I'm better known as The Adventures of Nicholas Fargo on MySpace.
Hey, how
welcome.
Are you?
It's good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's good to be on the air finally.
we're always scared too, so you're in good company.
Yes, you are.
What would you like to talk about tonight?
Well, actually, you know what? I got to listen to your archive last Sunday show, the archived one.
Yes.
Because I was late, I had to work that night. But the criminally underrated movies. You guys mentioned some good ones. I have to give you guys some credit.
Which ones struck you the most?
Before Sunrise, especially. That was a great movie.
That's a wonderful movie.
And you know what? And one of the movies you guys mentioned, actually, I need to recheck out. It's Kissing a Fool.
Yeah. Those were both suggestions from Ty, our guest host. And definitely great films. Do you have any personal favorites of movies that you think aren't you know, praised enough?
I have one, especially.
Yeah.
And that it came out actually a couple of years ago, and it came out so small that nobody ever knew it was out. And it was basically a kid's movie. It was called Little Manhattan, and it was excellent.
Oh, yeah, I've heard only good things about that.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that. I recognize the title.
Well, basically, it's about first love. It's set basically in Manhattan between two kids, who are basically, I think they're about 11. Josh Hutcherson from Bridge to Terabithia is in it.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's told from his perspective. Basically, he narrates the whole thing. And it's really interesting because, you know, I mean, it's like the same things you feel. I think first love is something you feel like every time you're with a different new girl. You feel.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And this movie captures that.
Exactly.
It's got a great following, the movie. It's really got a great following on the internet and everything.
Yeah. I love movies like that, though. I love movies that you feel are yours, your own personal discoveries.
Right.
You know, and I felt that way. Sometimes that could backfire, too, because I felt that way with Pulp Fiction. I remember watching Pulp Fiction a week before it opened anywhere. We had a print of it. It came way early when I was managing a movie theater, and I just put it together and watched it, and I felt like it was my own little discovery, and I felt so excited about it. I couldn't wait to tell people about it. And then, you know, years later, it's still the movie you can't stop hearing people talk about.
Right.
You know, little by little, it becomes less personal for you. You know,
but your memory of it that week before, you have that, and I think that's very important.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's how I feel about Assassination Richard Nixon. I don't know. Have you seen that? I know, Jerry, you have. But
I have not seen it.
Yeah,
it's worth your time.
That's a movie that absolutely feels like that to me. A very kind of personal attachment I have to that movie. Not that I can, you know, the themes personally relate to me. I'm not assassinating a president, but
it deserved. I was actually hoping you would pick that as your underappreciated film.
I had already chosen it as a film.
I know, but.
But there's a whole list of underappreciated films. That,
that
you know,
film only played a week around here when it finally came out, and it's very criminal. One theater, one small screen, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you so much, and we will definitely check out Little Manhattan. I have to see that now.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling in so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome to call in anytime you'd like.
Yes.
Hey, thanks. You guys have a good night.
You
thank
too.
You.
Thank
Bye-bye
you.
Now.
Bye.
Yeah, that was a good topic. The underrated, underappreciated.
We could do that every week, probably. Come up with
But we're not doing it this Sunday.
Because as you said, every film by him is underappreciated.
Every film by Brian De Palma is underappreciated. You're right. Also, I want to make a quick announcement about next Wednesday's show. We're starting to plan it now, and it looks like it's going to be centered around political documentaries. We are replaying the interview we did with the Camden 28 director, Anthony Giacchino, and also a member of the Camden 28, John Swinglish, because their film opens up in I believe, Cinema Village in New York City.
Yes, I think that's right.
On that Friday, the 27th. And also we have the director of another documentary called Your Mommy Kills Animals. And, you know, it reminded me, Lonnie Martin spoke to the people that come in with good intentions with an ideal, like women's issues and that sort of thing, and it can easily turn into extremism.
That's right.
I think this is what this film explores in terms of the animal rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it's very fair-minded, tells all sides of the story. And those make for the best documentaries.
Yes, they do. I agree.
Like, you know, that escape kind of the propaganda aspect and really unflinchingly take a look at all sides of an issue. So, and we might have another guest as well lined up for next Wednesday as well, so stay posted to all the blog announcements. And like we said at the beginning of the show, you can subscribe to Movie Geeks United by clicking on the subscribe to iTunes icon on the right-hand side of our profile page on blogtalkradio.com/MovieGeeksUnited. So you'll never miss a minute of our show. It'll be automatically downloaded in your podcast and iTunes for free. And you can listen to it anytime you want, burn it on a CD, play it in your Walkman or iPod or whatever
your
it is.
Your car.
So, all righty, Jerry. So are we hyped about Sunday's show?
Very hyped about Sunday's show because I just think we're going to get, like, really five different perspectives, I think. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. I cannot wait. A little nervous, as we always are before a two-hour tribute.
Yeah. But I think it will be a great time. And I just, you know, once again, people just listen in. You're going to learn some things, a lot of interesting things, a lot of interesting perspectives. If you thought Keith was interesting, wait till you hear these guys. This is going to be
absolutely
five wild viewpoints.
And we're also going to hear some insights from Stephen Bauer as well, who spoke to De Palma's talents during our Pacino tribute. We have some sound clips that we took from that interview related to De Palma. So,
oh, cool. Excellent.
Be able to hear from that as well. And also, De Palma has an extraordinary following in Winnipeg, of all places. And we actually had a fan write us, a listener write us, and just said Winnipeg is so behind De Palma, and particularly Phantom of the Paradise, which is a huge hit there.
That film is very important, if for nothing else. I think he was the one with that film who really sort of, if you want to say, foreshadows the 70s with Kiss concerts and the Kiss movie that would come later. They owe a lot to that movie.
Yeah.
They really do.
So we can't wait till Sunday. We have 5 seconds left. We got to leave. But thanks, everyone, for listening. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Jerry, give me a call. Let me know what you think of the show tonight.
Okay, I will. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Bye-bye.